Welcome to Building 72, the podcast brought to you by the Entertainment Arts and Engineering Program at the University of Utah. Thank you for joining your hosts, Adam Hunter and Corinne Lewis, to talk about the video game industry and, you know, probably other stuff.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Building 72. I am so excited today. I'm kind of always excited, though, about this.
No, but this one's like the nerdiest of the nerdies, given the three of us.
So. I know. Well, given my love of Harry Potter.
I was more talking about the writing aspect, but that's fine, too.
So everybody, welcome. Today we have one of my just dearest students of all time, Cade Johnson. Cade, do you want to tell everybody a little bit about what you're doing and how you got started in games?
Yes, thank you, Corinne. Thanks, Adam. I'm Cade Johnson. I am an associate writer at Avalanche Software / Warner Brothers Games, working on Hogwarts Legacy. And games have been an interesting experience in my life. I got started with Corinne, actually. So Corinne, when I was a undergrad student in college and about at the University of Utah in 2012, I took her Introduction to Video Games and Virtual Worlds class, and that kind of just, you know, was it that introduced me to this. I mean, I'd always loved games as a kid. That's always been one of my favorite things. And taking that class kind of just was like, oh, well, this is what I'm going to do. I didn't ever really think of this as a career before, you know, and in those days it was pretty new for colleges and things mm-hmm. like that. Yeah. And, you know, having this in those days, I sound like I'm an old man.
No, we're all aging pretty rapidly right now. Well, you know what I remember, Cade, is that, when you came into class, you came in with this huge knowledge of movies. And you were getting the film degree. And yep. I remember us kind of having a conversation about like, could I do this games? I never even thought that games would be a thing, but I love games mm-hmm. as much as I love movies. And here we are.
Yeah. And I didn't expect to be here, honestly, where I am, you know, I, as I said, I started with your class and then decided to go into the undergraduate program back when it was just an emphasis and, you know, in the film program, and then moved on to the grad program and then moved here. And it was kind of a dream come true, honestly. It kind of just happened. And
so how did writing fit into all that? Like at what point, so you said that the light bulb kind of came on and it was like, hey, games is my thing. Was writing right at that moment as well? Or was it more of like a games is my thing? And then after a while it narrowed down.
I always loved writing. I've always loved storytelling. You know, in high school and junior high, all those things, I would always take the writing classes, do the different writing things, but I never, you know, and I always was interested in writing scripts, writing films, because I have a big film guy and I had always this kind of hope to get into film and get into film directing and writing. And that's why I decided to do the film program at the U. I always thought games could be something that uses stories, you know, that uses stories to their benefit, that, you know, because a lot of the times, especially back then, and now it's gotten better, but back then and before then, games were very story phobic, I guess. You had things here or there, you know, the exceptions, Bioshocks, things like that, but a lot of them were kind of just, you know, just kind of throw the story away, kill stuff, or, you know, and seeing things as from a film background, I always thought, well, I think we can make games in terms of like, not like movies in terms of the way it's presented, but I do like, but kind of take the stories that we see in films and we see in books that we see in television shows and transfer them to a game space, you know, touching on more important themes than just what games in the past usually touched on. And as I said, they're getting up there now. They've changed a little bit, but I still don't think we've reached that, like that kind of pillar of art. Like, I think games are art, but I don't think we've reached either with respect from people as well as, I just don't think it's quite there yet.
I agree.
we haven't reached the golden age of video game writing yet.
Of storytelling and like
think about though.
Yeah, it is. It is. Yeah. You know, I mean, there's so many genres that films and books and TV shows have that we don't see in movies or in games, excuse me. Mm-hmm. You know, and games. The thing I love about games is that they're longer experiences, and so we can tell longer form stories similar to a book or to a TV show. Mm-hmm. With more character, with more everything, more of everything. Yep. And then, but then everyone should know that the interaction is one of the biggest parts in it, is because of you being interacting, you know, with things in a game, you feel closer to it. You feel closer to the story. You feel closer to the characters, whether it's you playing as yourself or you're playing as a specifically detailed character who has their own motivations, their own desires, things like that. And that's what games are so good at, is making you be a part of it.
Sorry to interrupt you, but
no, please.
I just remember when we first started having these conversations, you're right. You know, narrative was kind of a throwaway mechanic. Mm-hmm. It was kind of like, well, that's for the tutorial level and that's about it. And unless we, you know, but people would always point at, well, look, we have really great storytelling in Uncharted and, mm-hmm. you know, and it's like, have you ever seen Uncharted, the movie?
I used We're to going too soon. Though.
Yeah. Oh, I know. Well, I used to show it in class and it doesn't hang together in the same way. I mean, that's okay. But I just feel like we have moved on from that. I'm not having that argument with Bob and Roger anymore about the narrative is not important.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love those games. You know, I love Uncharted. I love the cutscene heavy games, but it's also, you know, I think we can move. We're doing good ways to move past that now in terms of the different experiences. You know, that could be one experience to have something a little more streamlined if you just want something more akin to a movie, but then we also have other experiences that take choice and you know, different types of ways to tell the story, including like environmental storytelling or procedural storytelling, that stuff kind of stuff. And it's just come a long way since then. I think in terms of maturity as well. Like, I always like to think, look back on the story of the first God of War game and then look at the new God of War game.
Right.
I think that's a great example to show how games have matured in terms of their content and in terms of what they're trying to say.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that's where games are now, or are getting there.
I was talking to a friend of mine who works at Santa Monica, and I was like, yeah, I started God of War 4 or 2018. Mm-hmm. And the last thing I expected was like, lessons on fatherhood and like forgiveness, and I'm like, what is going on here?
Well, Corey Barlog is just, you know, a lot more going on in his life now.
Mm-hmm.
So Kate, you mentioned environmental storytelling, which is a relatively new thing, at least as far as like video games are concerned. Mm-hmm. In your current either position now or in your experience, do writers play a big role in environmental storytelling, or is that more from like a designer thing and then they check in with the writers, or
that can vary a little bit. The level designers are the ones who would usually set that up. They're mm-hmm. the ones that kind of, like, you know, they place everything in the world, they make it look that way. But, you know, we'll always work with them, see what they, you know, see what they have, see what it works with us, and then we kind of we'll craft that story, and then they'll usually take that and do with it what they will in the level, and then we work with them to kind of tailor it to how we want it. But then, you know, if we have things like notes, you know, the classic gaming, finding a note, finding things to kind of build on the story, we're the ones who will write those and decide where, you know, where what we want them to be, what part of the story we want them to tell. But we work with those level designers a lot to kind of make those two things cohesive.
Has it been maybe the word is different than you expected, because you're working with working on an IP that is deep and rich from, you know, from many years of books and movies?
it has, since, as you said, it's an IP that we have to check everything. We have to know, we have to make sure everything is, we want to stay accurate, so we have to make sure everything works with the world. We have to make sure everything works with the rules. You know, make sure that things don't contradict each other. you know, we can't just, and then because it takes place in a different country, mm-hmm. we have to make sure our writing is fits with British dialect, British writing like that. We can't just say, you know, English or American words. And it's difficult, but it was difficult for the first little while, but you kind of get used to it. It's just kind of like becomes yeah. second nature almost. You're just like, oh, well, I know that thing doesn't work with the rules. I don't know, you know, with the world, things like that. It's difficult for a while, but you kind of get used to it. It's almost, you know, like with characters, you know, you have to create a way they speak. But then as you've written that character more and more, you kind of just don't even have to think about it. And you just go right back into their mind.
Right. I feel like when we can all go to trivia competitions again, I need to come with you and be on your team. Because you probably have like this level of trivia knowledge about the world of Harry Potter now.
It's
unrivaled.
Yeah, it's been a great, it's been a deep dive.
I bet.
I'll say, yeah.
Do you feel, Cade, that so writing in video games is kind of interesting because you mentioned all these other media, right? You mm-hmm. mentioned books and TV shows and movies and everything like that. Do you find yourself as a game writer being influenced more by other writers or by other writing in video games? I like, you know what I mean? Like, are you reading and you're like, yeah, I really like Hemingway, so I'm going to try and take mm-hmm. his style. And, or is it more of like, I really liked the writing in Uncharted, so that's something that means a lot to me? Or yeah.
I think both, actually. You know, writing for games, and you know this, is so different than any other medium, because you have to, you know, you have to write everything specifically to the way things work in the game. And so writing to design, writing things to fit in with design is so different than, you know, because you got to tell the story, but you also have to make it fit in with what the designers want, what the level designers need, everything like that. And you can't, you know, you can't just tell a straight story. You know, you have to fit in with budget, you have to fit in with all that stuff. And so I think I've taken a lot from other games, just kind of, you know, been inspired by the way that they've done things. If I'm playing a game and I see the way that they wrote something or the way that they portrayed something, I've like, oh, that's a good idea. Maybe I could do it like that. I could do it like this. But then other mediums as well. Like I take a lot of inspiration from those as well. You know, I Corinne knows this. I love Stephen King. And so I kind of, he's always kind of a writing idol to me. And so
I'm expecting like a part, like at some point, some Shining reference.
Yeah.
I really am.
Yeah. And he's always been an inspiration to me. And so I always take any type of writing inspiration from any writers. You know, I've been reading Neuromancer by William Gibson.
Oh, love
to
that.
Get ready for Cyberpunk. Yeah. And just reading that book has shown me how, and taught me a lot of things about world building, because I think that book is great at world building. It just throws you in there and it feels real and strange. And just reading that gives me a lot of, you know, inspiration on how to build worlds and how to, you know, create a sense of living in the game, or in my other writing as well. But in the game, it's helped a lot by just kind of doing that, you know.
Have you read Snow Crash?
No, I haven't, but I've wanted to. Yeah, I've wanted to. It's on my list.
Once your teacher, always your teacher.
Yeah.
So I've got, I'm talking a lot. I apologize, Corinne.
Go, Adam.
I have this is not from the student questions. This is straight up my own question. So you work on different properties. You know, we've all worked on things before that are independent. We've all worked on things that are licensed before. Mm-hmm. With something as ubiquitous as Harry Potter, mm-hmm. or the Wizarding World, let's call it. Oftentimes, like if you're making God of War 4, you're making it and you're saying like, or God of War 2018, you're making it and you're saying like, you know what, there's a fair chance that a lot of people are not familiar with the first three Gods of War. So mm-hmm. we kind of have to craft the story that way. Is there that concern with something like the Wizarding World of Harry Potter? Or is there just kind of the assumption of like, you know what, 90% of people out there at least understand the basics of our world and our rule set and things like that?
That's a really good question. I mean, there hasn't been a whole lot of talk about that I know of. And I think that what makes Harry Potter great is I think that in our game is kind of a new start. And what makes this and Harry Potter great is that it kind of is all, it works, it's very familiar to you. You know, it's a school, it's about kids. It's in the real world. It's all kind of familiar. And so even if you don't really know Harry Potter with our game, you're still going to kind of, I think, understand everything because it's all a little familiar, if a little strange, you know, in this fantastical way. But going in, there's not really, I'm not afraid of anybody who hasn't played Harry Potter, read any Harry Potter books, seen any Harry Potter movies. I don't feel like they're going to be that confused, you know? And I think that's what's great about it, that IP, is that it's kind of, it's kind of open to everyone. You don't really need to know a whole lot about it to get it, you know, and to get the themes and to get the characters.
Thank you for that. I'm curious because I've never personally worked on something as big as that. And so I'm always wondering, is there like a writer's room meeting of like, all right, for that random 5% that have never heard of magic before, we have to cater to them.
Luckily, no. Luckily, yeah. As I said, it's a pretty easy world to get into. And so
yeah. What kind of tools are you using? Are you using just spreadsheets and?
We'll use spreadsheets, which is my favorite type. Just kidding. I spreadsheets.
I was like, really?
Not for lots of text. They're not great.
Yeah, nope. And then we use a program called Artisy, which is a little bit, I don't know if you guys have heard of that. It's a little bit similar to like Twine and things.
Yeah.
And it's very much just a branching dialogue system. So we create conversations, we create other things with branching, you know, nodes that have the lines in them, and then they can branch depending on choices or depending on different things that happen with coding and things like that. And that's where we do the majority of our writing. And then if we have like cinematics and stuff, we'll usually write them in script format.
Sure.
Just so that we can have that for the cinematics people and the animators, so that they can kind of get what's in our head a little bit better.
Yeah, I bet. I mean, I'm sure you're really using a lot of the skills that you learned in school.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Practice that a lot, I know. So
yeah. That was really helpful. Like I wouldn't have gotten the job that I did without that, and it prepared me a lot. You know,
you've taken Paul Larson's script writing classes, right?
I hadn't. No, I never took Paul Larson's class. I only took one script writing class in college, and it was I forgot his name. He's the head of film.
Oh, Kevin Hansen.
Yeah, Kevin Hansen. I took one of his script writing classes, but that was all I ever took. But I always kind of loved writing scripts, so it kind of was always there for me.
Yeah, I think your brain is movie.
It is. It's weird. I don't understand it. I don't get it.
you and I are cut from the same cloth, yeah. My friend.
Well, as writers, we're just drawn to good narrative wherever mm-hmm. we find mm-hmm. it. And I think that for a really long time, the best narratives we were getting were in movies, you know? I mean, yep. We certainly were not getting great TV, and, you know, not that books were bad, but I don't know about you guys, but there was a time where like I couldn't find something that I really just fell into reading, but a movie, it's just such a more visceral thing, which I think is why it translates to our brains for games, because we want to be there, you know?
Yep. Movies compared to books, not as much, well, TV a little bit, not as much TV, but with books, you know, they're visual, they're audio, they're everything. Mm-hmm. And then games has that one extra element, which just goes deeper with the interactivity. Mm-hmm. And that's what makes it so that's what's so awesome about it and impactful.
Yeah. And I mean, I think we bring a lot of our own ideas to books. Mm-hmm. I have a book that I recommend all the time is what we see when we read, it's called, but you know, movies just do something. I don't know. They're all just different.
Yeah.
Aren't we lucky that we get to live in a time when they're all there? I think music is like such a huge part of all of that. And unless you're picking a soundtrack for when you're reading a book, it's a very different thing.
Yep. Yep.
Cade, you mentioned you wouldn't have the job you had without the experience in school. I know a lot of students have questions about what should, especially having just come out of school, what should a game writing portfolio look like? Could you speak to what yours was at the point that you had graduated and or got picked up by Avalanche?
Sure. Well, I was in the grad program and I was working on the thesis game. And the grad program is a little bit harder to do deeper narratives because the games are done in such a tight timeline with so little people. So what I kind of did there was I wanted to tell a story in our game and I wanted it to have some sort of story weight. And so I sat down and came up with story ideas, came up with ideas to kind of just as tell the story as best we could in the best way that we could in this quickest time. I wrote scripts. I wrote, you know, plenty of other things just to kind of understand what we wanted and kind of try and get that across. And then when the opportunity came, I sent in some samples from those scripts as well as some samples from of scripts I wrote previously, and they impressed my boss enough that he called me up. So it was, and then obviously I've worked on a bunch of games, and so that, you know, I can't even remember how many I've worked on, 1, 2, 3, a lot, and mm-hmm. that helped just knowing kind of the nature of game development and how it works. And obviously it's going to be a lot different in a studio system and with 200 people instead of 8, but I still kind of understood what it was like. And I think another thing that I think the program does great is just making you work with people. Like, that's what game development is, even in COVID times, is working with people and talking to people and, you know, compromising and knowing how to talk and work with people. And that's what the program did and prepared me for a lot. Was just, I used to be a lot shyer than I am, and grad school helped me with that. And I think that's what helped me with my job, to get my job, is to actually be able to talk to people, you know?
I agree with that. You were a lot shyer and now you're...
I was.
Yes. And I just think that doing what you really are loving doing and what you knew you wanted to do, because there was a time I remember that you weren't, I mean, and we say this all the time, it's like getting a job writing in games is still hard.
Oh yeah.
You know, there's a lot more, we used to say nobody gets jobs as designers, and now it's the, you know, design, there are lots more design jobs, but they're not that many writer jobs. Mm-mm. They're just not.
Yeah. Yeah. And you mentioned when I've talked to you about like my thoughts, or, you know, like what my future would have been in the industry. You know, I'm not a coder. I can't code. Like, I can't do any of that. I can't draw. and so I was worried about like what my future would be when I was in class. And I remember coming and talk to you, and it was like, well, design, writing, I like those two things. And I focused on them in college, and I focused them in grad school, and I played games and I watched movies and I did different things to kind of learn more about just things I liked. And it kind of just all worked out, I guess.
You know, what's really funny, Kate, is that I've been doing this a long time, mm-hmm. and luckily I get to talk to people who have graduated and gone on. And even if they didn't end up in games, I always have people that say, oh, I just got really lucky. And I just got lucky to get my job. It didn't, mm-hmm. I actually have heard Adam say that when he was writing. And, you know, I think that you have to be ready for luck. Mm-hmm. So you have to have done all the work, prepped yourself, and know what opportunity looks like when it bites you in the butt. Mm-hmm. And that's mm-hmm. luck.
Yep. Exactly. And I guess I was lucky enough to have done that.
You were ready.
You were ready.
So excited.
What is the writing pipeline at Avalanche look like? We had spoken a little bit before. Well, actually, let's do this, a two-part question. Sure. Because we were talking about a little bit before the podcast started. What are you doing on like a day-to-day basis? Like, what kind of writing are you doing? And then the second part of that is, how does that pipeline work? Are you doing it solo? Are there review check-ins? Things like that.
So over the 2 years that I've been there, I've kind of jumped around a bit. And right now I'm mainly focusing on quests and missions, writing for those, writing cinematics that need to be in those. And that's my, most of my day is doing that, but I also focus, I kind of do a lot of the more technical stuff with Artistry, our program, whether it's, exporting scripts for recording or, changing, you know, values and things to indicate to us and to the other, to others when things get recorded, when things are ready to be recorded. We have a pretty we have a big game and a lot of freaking lines, and so we have to stay pretty diligent on tracking what we've recorded, what's been reviewed, what hasn't been reviewed, things like that. And then I work a bit with cinematics before the whole COVID thing. I was the kind of like story representative for them, and I've kind of moved away from that as things have gotten busier. But to answer your question, Adam, about our pipeline, back when the game was, more in its infancy, we kind of started with pitching ideas for things, getting those approved, getting like basic writing into the system, you know, just simple things so that the implementers could hook up the writing and make it all work. And then we'd review those and then rewrite them with reviews, try to get them better and better, do some more reviews, get them better and better. And change if there's any design changes, anything like that. And then once we feel we're fully confident with what we have, we'll bring them to a final review with like the heads of, and we'll kind of table read through it, make sure it sounds okay, do one final pass to fix anything. And then if it's good, we'll pass it along to our tone reviewer. She'll tone review it, make sure it has that British kick to it. And then they'll lock it. And if everything's good, if everything goes the way we hope it does, we'll send it off to our recording session to have the actors record it, and then it's done. But that's usually how it goes for like more of the gameplay writing. So for things like with cinematics that need a lot more time, that need the animators and the cinematics people to work on them, I'll just write out a script of the cinematic. Review it with my writing directors, go back and forth, check everything, once they approve it, I'll send that off to cinematics people, I'll have that be tone reviewed, and then I'll send it off to the cinematics people, and they'll start their work on it, and then, we'll kind of see those their work on the animations on the cinematics, we'll give feedback, and then once that's done, at least once they do the mocap for that, we'll then bring the lines to do ADR. So that they can, record the lines over the voice, right, or over the mocap to make sure it all fits.
The tone review sounds interesting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's how we got to make sure it sounds British.
Right. I think they should hire me at CD Projekt Red to do that.
To make sure it sounds Polish?
Yeah.
No, just American. I'm really good American. Wouldn't that be an awesome job for CD?
Kate, are you using, with the cinematics, you mentioned artistry with the branching dialogue and things like that. With the cinematics, are you using Final Draft or Drama Queen or something like that?
So I don't, I use Final Draft for my normal writing, like my normal script writing, but at work on my work computer, I just use Word because Word has a script format.
Yeah.
And it's easier for me to get it than have to go get all the Final Draft stuff. But I prefer Final Draft easily. Word's script writing thing is kind of crappy.
I recently discovered one, Drama Queen. It's like an open source Final Draft, and I actually like it more than Final Draft.
Really? Okay, yeah. I'll have to check that out. I'm gonna write that name down.
Artistry is interesting. We have talked to that company before, but we just don't teach enough writing classes to make it a site license make sense. So, but that's interesting. That's good to know. Maybe I'll have to revisit that.
Yeah, it's a good program overall. It has its quirks. It has some annoying things and some things that kind of you have to get used to. But once you kind of understand it and understand the way it works, it works. It does its job. Mm-hmm. It does its job pretty well.
Mm-hmm. Have you written any quests that you really just are super proud of?
Yeah. I mean, I'm proud of everything I work on, thankfully.
I'm glad to hear that.
And I can't
say. That's rare,
too.
Yeah. So yeah. That's awesome.
I can't say anything about them, obviously. But,
no, of course not.
But yeah, I can't wait for people to get a hold of them and to play them. And, I'm excited to just see them when they're done, And then it's so exciting. I can't stress how exciting it is to just hear your lines that you wrote to be read by an actor. Like, it's so awesome, and it's just really, really cool, and I can't stress how good that feels when you see that or hear that.
Well, let's do this. Let's have a part two of this in a year or 2 years or whatever.
Sure.
And we'll play through some of the quests that you wrote.
Sure.
And so that we can experience them like in their entirety.
That'd be great. I love it.
That would be so fun. I would mm-hmm. love that so much. We've also been thinking about inviting people to come and play their student games.
Oh yeah.
In the industry for a little while. So
sure. I'd love to.
Adam and I have lots of ideas for this. So we're going to do this forever.
Like writers, we have lots of ideas.
Right. Let's hope this pandemic's gone soon and it can all be in person.
Yes. Yeah. That would be super fun. Actually couch.
Yeah. Yeah.
On the mm-hmm. couch. mm-hmm.
So one of the students was asking, it's kind of funny, we had these back-to-back questions of is it frustrating when story elements change after you've already finished your writing? It sounds like what you've talked about, it sounds like the process is pretty ironed there and pretty solid, but your reaction is maybe making you think differently.
Things change. That's how storytelling goes, and that's mm-hmm. how make it creativity goes, especially when it's not, if it was just me making this, that's a little bit different because, you know, I have my vision, but, and even when it isn't just me, even if it was, you know, books, you know, like an author, they're going to have to edit things. They're going to have to change things. And that's what happens. And it can be frustrating. It can, but I always like to think of it as it's going to make a better product because I believe in and trust the designers, and I believe in and trust everybody who want things to change it's all for the benefit of the game. And it's frustrating, but sometimes you just got to say, well, if it makes the game better, oh well.
I think
and usually it does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the gig. I always tell students who want to, you know, they want to be write this grand story and have nobody change anything. This happens in Capstone all the time, and it's like
write a book.
This job.
Yep.
That's not this job.
Yep. Yeah.
Go home and write your great American novel.
Yep. Yep. Do if you want it to stay the way you want it, make your own thing.
Yeah.
You can't do it with other people. Mm. And, you know, games can change so much. Mm-hmm. You know, games are in development for, you know, they used to be in development for, you know, 6 months, a little bit longer than that back in the day. Now they're in development for so long. Like I was doing some cyberpunk research, and that game was announced in 2012.
I know.
And it hasn't even come out yet.
Isn't that
crazy? And it's just, and so throughout those years, you know, the whether it's 5 years or 10 years, the game's going to change. It's not going to remain. I know. I don't remember who it was, but in class at the U, they would always say, you know, the game starts as one thing, it ends as another thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, your game's not going to be your original vision. It's going to be different.
And
that's inevitable.
That's a little game and a big game, right? Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter. It's, you know, if mm-hmm. if you think it's going to be what you pitch,
mm-hmm.
you're going to be sad in the long run.
Yep. Yep. And you just kind of have to realize that's that's inevitable, and just mm-hmm. go along with it and do what's best for the game. That's kind of the takeaway there, is just do what's best for the game.
Yeah. I think that actually makes it so you don't really fight with writer's block, you know, because we talk about writer's block all the time, but because you have so many different angles to come at mm-hmm. things, it's you're constantly working through stuff in a different way. It's not like yep. I have to come up with this thing all by myself, because you're usually working with a bunch of other people too.
Yeah, and that's what's great with working with the team. I don't know about other studios, I don't know about other writers, but it's great to be able to just like, I'm having a hard time with this, can I talk to you? We can go over this, we can pass ideas around, and you know, figure it all out and come up with something that works. And you know, that you can do that with designers, you can do that with other writers, and it's always helpful just having another, you know, having this team with you to help you along.
One, to what you said earlier, I like, that's awesome to hear you say that, like, you know, this is for the betterment of the game and everything like that, because I don't know if either of you two know, but writers are often known for having a little bit of an ego and a little bit of a god complex. And, in my experience in games, that can also be the case, where it really is like, this is my thing. So to hear you say, like, you know, we're all in this together, make it, like, that's such a, I wish more people, not just writers, I wish more game developers just in general would have that perspective, because if that was the case, there would be a better product at the end
mm-hmm.
of it, if everyone had that thought.
I don't know if you guys agree with this, but I I feel like there's a big difference between being a production artist and a fine artist, right? Fine mm-hmm. art is about your own vision. Production artist is like a graphic designer. It's like you're, you know, doing this other stuff. And so when you're mm-hmm. writing for games, you are the production person. Yeah. You're not the fine artist person. So unless you want to make your own game, and yep. then you can make Stardew Valley, which is a delight.
Mm-hmm. So. Yep. You gotta be a team player. That's the biggest thing, is you gotta work with, figure out how to work with people, or you're not gonna last.
Yeah, or don't do it.
Yeah.
Well, like I mentioned, this is, you know, we're doing these podcasts now, and we've been meeting, you know, talking to lots of other people, and everybody says that over mm-hmm. and over and over again. It's not just the producers. It's you know, from the senior programmers to the tech artists to the, it's all about communication. Like, if you cannot communicate, you're not going to be successful in this. And that's one of the things I always yep. try to really talk about with my freshman students, because they have a very different idea about what games are. Mm-hmm. Hopefully by the time they've listened to all of these, they will know.
Yeah. And communication is so important, because as a writer, you got to be able to explain what you're trying to do, what you want to do. And sometimes people don't get that, you know. You have to be able to explain that clearly enough to understand to people who have different minds than you do. Cause you know, some people are programmers. They don't have as much of a creative mind as a writer would. And you have to be able to talk to people and help them understand what you're trying to do, and vice versa as well.
I remember the very first time that I wrote a document, and then a programmer came back with a thing, and I was like, this isn't what I wrote. And he was like, no, it's exactly what you wrote. And then I was like, oh no, I described it totally wrong.
Yep. Yep.
Cade, what are your favorite things to write? But as far as game writing, like, what are your favorite things to write, and what are your least favorite things to write?
I love writing cinematics. So as I come from a film, I just like screenwriting, and I think that's where I can, I've able to let loose the most, and I can kind of, I just love that. I just think it's just fun to write that way. And that's always my favorite thing. And then least favorite, I mean, there can be some hard, you know, having to explain game mechanics and design, or game mechanics in story, like to have a game mechanic make sense with a narrative and to explain it is so hard.
That is hard.
Like, it is so difficult. And then we do things like, here, we do things called generic scripts, which are like scripts for gameplay lines that kind of just will play randomly or when things happen in game. And so, for instance, like, let's say we have to have a line for a character to say hello when the main character walks past. We'll have to write 5 different versions of hello for 15 different characters. And then we will have to do 300 lines of these generic lines for one character, you know, just for these little things that could happen, whether it's you hit them with something or you walk past them or you anything. And while that can be fun and creatively rewarding, because you have to like really think about it and, you know, come up with these perfect little, you know, brief lines, but it can also be pretty frustrating in terms of just like, how do I write hello 5 more times? Or how do I say, you know, goodbye in a different way that's not goodbye, or, you know, the 5 other times I've written it. And that can be frustrating, but it's also, I think it's good to get your creative juices going, you know, because you really got to think about it.
That's hilarious. I'm just thinking of Animal Crossing right now, and how many times they've told me to go talk to Isabel, even though I've been playing that game for 3 years.
I can't even imagine Animal Crossing, how much writing there has to be done with that. Like,
yeah,
with a game that can go on forever.
Speaking of Cyberpunk, did you guys see the tweet of the Cyberpunk translation script?
Yes.
I didn't, no.
It is a table that has 6 or 7 stacks of paper, each of which is like 2 feet tall.
Oh, wow.
It is.
They just took a picture of all of their Japanese translations of the script. It was
cool. And the dude standing behind it is just like, you can just see the like soul that's drained from his face.
Well, I, you know, I worry about them. I mean, crunch, man. It's a thing. I hope you're not having to do that.
Yeah. No, I have a pretty good work-life balance, I think. And, you know, I feel like I'm able to get stuff done, and I don't feel like I ever have to overwork, really.
I feel like we all live at our desks anyway now.
Yeah. And I mean,
for the TV.
I mean, it's like back when we were at the office, I would, you know, leave at 6. And then if somebody messaged me, I would be like, oh, I've already left. You'll have to get it in the morning. But now I can just be like, oh yeah, let me go do that real quick.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not bad or anything. It's like, it's just, it's what life is now, I guess.
That happens to me. I have a Discord for my students. Whoa, that was a, I like being available sometimes.
Yeah. So I have it's possibly the last question of the podcast, but it's the last question on the list, but it's uniquely suited to you.
Oh, okay. All right.
Is there a game, and you could take this a couple different ways. Is there a game that you think would be better adapted as a film? And I think they could be asking, is there a game that hasn't been adapted as a film that should be, or they might be asking, is there a story of a game that that game actually would have been a better film than it would have been a game?
That's a good question. That's a hard question.
That's why I saved it for the end.
Yeah. Yeah. a game that would be better as a movie.
I don't know. That question before we got the Witcher TV series.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's a good game, but I'm really enjoying Henry Cavill.
Who doesn't?
Oh man, that's hard. Like I my mind's drawn a blank right now.
Mine is too. Whatever it's worth.
Like,
do you think is there a game that you think should be made into a movie?
Well, you know, that's an interesting question, because a lot of people will be like, games should never be movies. I don't believe that. I like having that kind of, because I think games have a lot of great, you know, characters and stories in there, and I like to those get to an expanded audience, you know, through films. And what I think games need to try and do, and I think they're trying to do this, like with the Uncharted movie and kind of the Assassin's Creed movie, but that didn't go that well.
Yeah.
But where they're trying to expand the world, instead mm-hmm. of just being, I'm going to make an adaptation of this game, they're trying to make it so it sits there with the story of the game, but a new story. And I think that works better with introducing people to it, because it starts with a clean slate,
yeah,
but it still feels as if it's part of the world and it's bringing it together, bringing it together. That's what I think if game movies should be doing, that's what I think. And they are, it seems like, hopefully. And that's what I think they should be doing now. And
well, and then look at like movie games, right? Like the one that you're working on, for instance, yep. or book games. I'm 100% on board with that. I mean, I'm a sucker for world building.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'd rather much see three stories set in the same universe rather than the same story three times. Like, absolutely.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And like, you know, I was playing Jedi Fallen Order, and I'm like, I'm much happier that this is a new story than just retell. It's just going to tell The Force Awakens or whatever, you know?
Yes.
I just like having, I like being in that world, but I like having new stories than what I just saw.
Although it's really like the Lego Harry Potter.
Yes, yes. The Lego is an exception. Lego is definitely an exception.
They are.
Lego is definitely an exception.
Yes.
I'm still trying to think about your question.
It's okay.
About what could be in a movie.
Well, how about this? Because there'll probably be at least a little bit of time until this goes mm-hmm. up live or goes up. And so if you think of it in between then and now,
I can put it in the
text, okay, and then okay. We'll have text up on the bottom right now, and everyone else is reading it right now, and we're having no idea. So.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So
well, oh, I just thought of one.
Okay.
I just thought of one.
Yeah.
Okay. I really think Metal Gear is the perfect for a movie.
Uh-huh.
And they supposedly are making a movie of Metal Gear, which I don't think that'll ever happen, but I think that series is so cinematic and movie referential mm-hmm. that I think they could, if they did it right, I think they could make a great Metal Gear movie. It'd be freaking weird. Like, it'd be insane. But if they could do it right, I think they could do it. But I don't ever think they will be able to do it.
Well,
that, yeah. I'd like to see it. I would like to see it. Yeah. And any other, you know, I love horror. And so any horror game I would like to see as a movie, just because I think it's interesting, just taking those stories. Like, I'm really interested in the new Resident Evil movie they're making. I'm really interested in all that stuff. And I think horror games can translate well to movies as well, because
I agree. I think that the narrative arc in horror, if it's really, really well with games, mm-hmm. or vice versa. So, yeah. I mean, look at Silent Hill, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we are running out of time, but we always like to end with this question what would, if you could go back in time and give yourself advice about getting into the game industry, or if you were giving advice to someone who wants to get into the game industry, what would you say?
I think I would say put yourself out there. I think try and be as, you know, don't be afraid of being sociable. Don't be afraid of talking and interacting and working with people, you know, because I was always pretty shy, and I didn't like to talk with people and, you know, put myself out there. But once I entered, you know, grad school and had to do that, I learned that it's essential for just basic development of social skills. But also just in the games, you know, being here, I wouldn't be able to do what I'm doing without that, because that really taught me how to work with people and how to not, show my ideas, show what I would like to do, what I think is right for the project. And without that, without me trying that, I wouldn't have been able to do any of this. I wouldn't have been able to, you know, throw myself forward and get the jobs that I have now, or interact with any of the people I'm working with, you know? And I think just putting yourself out there, and even if you're afraid to be outgoing, to put yourself out there, just do it, and it gets easier.
It does. Mm-hmm. I love that piece of advice, because we have introverted, and mm-hmm. it's hard. It is hard.
Introverted game developers and introverted writers. What?
Yeah, and it can make life really hard, and not just in work, in anything. Mm-hmm. But once you get past that, like that barrier of being nervous or worried, it makes everything easier.
Yeah. Yes. Says the extrovert. I agree. Okay, so so nice to see you.
Thank so
you
great so to see you guys again, and thank you for bringing me on. It was awesome.
Yes, and we'll do round two. Promise.
Fantastic. Love to.
Thanks,
guys. Bye bye.